coming up this week on the Course of Life podcast. We had a jam-packed week of golf drama. Everything from Brooks versus Bryson, a.k.a. Brooksy, to the positive test heard around the world, and lots of drama with the U.S. Open at Olympic as well. Plus, everything we're tuned into, including the life of a 911 operator and some rewatching that had to be done. And this week's guest is Hope Barnett, who is on the LPGA Tour content team, putting out some really cool stories on the best women's golfers in the game. Shared some stories from her travels to Vegas for the match play as well. And all of it is brought to you by our friends at Active Body. I love the Active 5 unit. It's that tiny little hand-sized portable unit that I bring everywhere. Mike, I even brought it with me on vacation. Would you believe
That's dedication right there.
It's that easy to bring. It, like I said, it's portable, it's travel friendly, and it's an easy way to just keep yourself tuned in just for 5-10 minutes a day. Get your stretches in. You know, Mike, I was consuming a lot of food and beverage this past week.
Calories.
So I needed just a few minutes a day to stretch, and the Active Body Active 5 unit did that for me. It can do it for you as well, too. COL is our promo code. COL for 20% off your Active 5 unit. Check them out at activebody.com.
Hello, interwebs, and welcome to Course of Life, part of the Morning Read Podcast Network. We are proud to be presented by our friends at Desert Fox Golf, Groovit Golf, and Tosi Snacks. I'm Michael, he's Alex. And Alex, what a week in golf it was. let's get into the memorial at Jack's Place Muirfield Village in Columbus, Ohio. A course that looked pretty different from it did a year ago. As we all remember, last year as they were on 18, they were tearing up the sixth green. It was quite the sight. And Jack ended up going through, and from what I heard from some things I saw, they actually went, oh, yeah, let's just fix every hole. Let's just go to every hole and do something.
It didn't seem to affect the play of a few guys at the top of the leaderboard, including John Rahm, who was just absolutely tearing through the course. So, Jack, I got news for you. You made all these changes, but the guys are just getting better and longer and stronger and further every moment. It's hard to keep up with these guys.
Well, we all remember, I think it was last year when we were here at Memorial for 2 weeks, we heard Jack had said that he had COVID, and now we had the antibodies.
Yes,
and,
you know,
we learned
there.
Some things about Jack the man during those couple weeks. And COVID decided to rear its head once again at Memorial. And this time it was John Rahm on the 18th green, having a massive lead, just tearing up the golf course, playing in a different universe than everyone else out there. John Rahm is greeted by PGA Tour officials who tell him that his test that he took after his second round, in which he got a hole in one in his second
which
round,
which ended Saturday morning,
he had two positive tests off of his test sample and had to withdraw from the tournament. He, almost started crying on the 18th. There.
And I don't blame him. Do you?
No, I don't. And so then he was carted off, and that was all we saw from him. He's going to be in 2 weeks of quarantine, and we'll see. He'll be able to hit back out there on the course like 2 days before
US
Open at Torrey Pines. So this was huge. And of course, golf Twitter erupted over this. And I want to get to this because there's a lot of talk that this was not the right thing to do for him, that he should have been given the opportunity to keep playing by himself or something, or they should have said it to him on the 18th
grade. Oh, yeah, a million theories thrown around because we're all experts in medicine and science now in the past year. So we know exactly how to do everything. So.
This was brought up on Twitter last night, and I shared it with you, and I'm going to try to find this tweet real quick because this kind of put the pin in everything for me here, where what we need to realize is, would you rather have seen John Rahm doing high fives and everything as he walked into the scorer's tent, or would you rather be taken seriously? So this is Jason Sobel who said this on Twitter. This was the right thing to do. He needed to be told as he walked up 18, because remind me too, if he had tested positive and he was on 13, they would have went out to him on 13 and would have pulled him off the course, right?
So they verified the second positive test quite literally when he was on the 18th hole, hitting a shot into the green. So at that point, what was said was done. The round was, you know, essentially over. So yeah, they told him right after he putted out, and obviously it made made for a tremendously weird and eerie scene. As CBS was cutting off the air, they decided to stay on and found out this news moments later after seeing Rom's reaction. And it was just a really strange, eerie moment. You know, we all kind of were in this position in recent weeks with especially everything we saw at Kiowa, where we thought that golf had crossed the finish line in beating COVID and keeping it and the spread of it out of the game. And lo and behold, one more positive test rears its head in the ugliest way. You know, we had some positive tests that had made players withdraw on, you know, a Tuesday or a Wednesday, Mike. Nothing like this with the leader of a tournament. So obviously it started the tweet firestorm that ensued.
Yeah. And you know, what's interesting here is, of course, is that we, as we were reminded this week, is that contact tracing was taking place from the beginning of the week when Rom was notified that he had been in contact with someone who tested positive. And contact tracing on the PGA Tour only takes place if you haven't been vaccinated.
That was the key. We talked about that story in April. There are fresh people's memory that the PGA Tour has officially said they are no longer testing vaccinated players. That's just a fact that has been reported. That is a fact. So take whatever conclusion you want, or, you know, throw whatever professional medical opinion you think you have or have gotten about this. But that's essentially the bottom line as to why Rom got what he got. And it's just an absolutely horrible position for him to be in. I was just extremely impressed with how well he took it, considering how horrible and horribly timed the news was for him.
Yeah, you know, I just need to say, if this doesn't get all the rest of the guys on tour that aren't vaccinated running to a vaccination site, I don't know what will. $1.5 million mistake right here for John Rahm, where he could have had two shots, had maybe about 12 to 36 hours of not feeling that great, and be back out there and won a tournament. So, and I mean,
there'd been a lot of skepticism that PGA Tour players were not getting vaccinated because maybe they were afraid of side effects of the second shot, how it may affect their play, or their level of lethargicness or tiredness on the course or whatnot. And I would hope and think after this prime example that maybe that worry is put to the side and just realize, like, all right, let's just poke me. Let's just poke me and move on with this, so I don't ever have that threat come into my way again. But I'm going to shout out the nine core value. Shout out to our friends at the First Tee, though. I give credit to John Rahm for taking a lot of responsibility right off the bat. You know, he obviously was very distraught when he got the news, but he quickly came out, him and his team, with a statement that evening, you know, saying he takes responsibility for his actions and whatnot. He understood the circumstances of what he was doing, being in contact tracing. So, again, I give Rom credit for being as big of a man as he could possibly be in that horrible moment for him.
That was awfully big of him. And of course, that then opened up Sunday to Patrick Cantlay, Colin Morikawa, and Scottie Scheffler, into these guys now being in a prime position to win a tournament that they were probably just going to try to battle out for second place. Yes. And Cantlay supposedly was getting ready to leave the course and went, you know what? Nope, we're going back to the putting greens. We're going back to the range. We're going to work for a while because now I'm going to go win this tournament. And he certainly had a different mentality on Sunday, but it did seem like going down the stretch there and on the playoff hole, Morikawa, that no one really wanted to win this tournament.
Yes. While there was tons of drama, simultaneous too, which we'll get to when we talk U.S. Women's Open in a bit, but there was a lot of action late Sunday, and that playoff was an interesting one because there was a lot of rough, a lot of bunkers, and just not a lot of seized moments until Cantlay did what he needed to, and it ended up being a missed Morikawa putt, a short one, that gave Cantlay the victory. It was just a couple guys that you could tell were maybe just a little bit beat up by the course after a long week. There was a lot of rain that paused things. It was a lot of stop and go throughout the weekend. And Cantlay was just kind of the last one left standing. And shout out to him, a guy who hasn't had much form recently. He's still, you know, top 20, 30 player, but has had some miscuts on his schedule recently. It's good to see him break through with a win like this. And an impressive, gritty performance without maybe kind of winning without his A game, just kind of the B plus game to get by.
Yeah, it didn't seem like anyone really had their A game, but Cantlay scores his second victory at Memorial, his first coming back in 2019. And we'll keep an eye on all these guys because in a couple weeks, we get to head to Torrey Pines for the U.S. Open. And what we're looking forward to is the continuation every week. This just gets better and better now of the Brooks and Bryson saga. Are you chanting Brooksy out there on the course now all the time? Because I think that's what I'm going to do.
You mean Brooks versus Brooksy, right? Is that what you're referring to? this for better or worse, I don't know if this is the new mashed potatoes on tour right now, but if you're going to a PGA Tour tournament and Bryson DeChambeau's walking by, chances are you're going to hear Brooksy being called out. They're basically, the golf world is trolling Bryson right now in this feud between Brooks Koepka and Bryson DeChambeau. He's getting called Brooksy on the tee when he's clearly not Brooksy, and he is flustered by it. Brooks Koepka has turned this into an activation, Mike. He turned this into a promo with Michelob Ultra and said, hey, if you were one of those fans that got kicked out for yelling Brooksy, send us a DM. We'll send you some beer for your trouble so you can enjoy your weekend. So they have really turned up the notches on this feud as we head into the U.S. Open. And that is the gazillion-dollar question, is do they get paired together? Does the USGA pull the trigger and put them together for the first two rounds at Torrey Pines or not? And we're going to find out in about a week or so.
You know, I think if they do get put together, I think between the two of them, I would put money on Bryson pulling out.
Yes. I love that. Just a mysterious lower back injury or something like that.
Because if we've seen anything between these two players over the course of the last year or so, it's that Bryson really struggles with the media and the attention. I mean, remember, he was yelling at camera guys when he was on, you know, on getting out of a bunker or had a bad shot or something. And he was yelling to them to stop flicking their camera and get out of his face.
Very personally.
He does. So he struggles with that. So this is, you know, I'm not putting any money on Bryson at Torrey Pines.
No, this is Mike, Brooks versus Bryson. This is honestly, this is like the quarterback versus the nerd in high school. Honestly, it's really what it feels like. Like Brooks is definitely doing a lot of the bullying, a lot of the strong arming, kind of using the bro audience that backs him. And he's easy to back in this situation. But I can tell, you can tell that it's interesting. This all started with Bryson really distracting Brooks big time. So you can tell that Bryson does occupy some space in Brooks Koepka's head, which makes this rivalry all the more fascinating. So they could either get paired together next week, and I'm thinking maybe Patrick Reed joins that threesome.
I was going to say, we got, if we're going to do this, let's make this the most hated gruesome group. So you got to put Patrick Reed in there with Bryson.
That's the one. So it's either going to happen like that, or if you don't want to see them together next week at Torrey, the other authentic thing that could happen is maybe they just play well enough and they're paired together in the final pairing on Sunday, maybe even of a major. Wouldn't that be absolutely amazing?
Better than all the times we wanted it to be Tiger and Phil. I so want Brooks and Bryson in the final pairing on Sunday.
There's just so much open hatred. You knew that Tiger and Phil, they were competitors and adversaries, but there really wasn't hatred there. There was just competitive fire. This is genuine disdain in golf, and it's very public, and it's on social media because it's 2021. So definitely a story we're going to be following in the weeks to come.
Love it. I just love it.
It's juicy.
Let's talk about something else that was just fantastic to watch this weekend, and that was the Women's U.S. Open at Olympic Club in San Francisco, the LPGA just taking over. We, of course, had the showdown in the PGA Tour at Jack's Place, but what was going on at Olympic was probably even more spectacular.
Yeah, it was, honestly, a high drama, and obviously when you have the storyline of an American leading the U.S. Open and been playing so well throughout the week, that just only fuels the fire. The LPGA is an extremely international tour, and we're going to get a lot into that with this week's guests as well, too. But having Lexi Thompson up there on the leaderboard was a big storyline. Mike, Lexi Thompson is 26 years old. This was her 15th U.S. Open. Think about that. This is how long she's been in the game. Still has not gotten that U.S. Women's Open. And unfortunately, what we're kind of all like kind of clenching our chairs for ended up happening. The great catastrophe and the collapse of Lexi, unfortunately, blowing that 5-shot lead on the back nine on Sunday.
Yeah, double bogey on 11, bogey on 14, 17, and bogey on 18, which got her out of the playoff.
That's bad.
It's just like,
that was like an iron and a wedge too, Mike. That was not a good bogey at all to finish. No. And you could tell the nerves were really hitting her. Like she was like on the verge of tears, like on the 18th hole, like you could see the emotion of everything was just catching up to her. It was a roller coaster all at one moment, cavalcading down on her. And you felt horrible because you know, and I know what it's like in our shoes as just an average golfer when it's all collapsing and we're trying to have our best round. She's trying to win the U.S. Women's Open in front of her home country and feeling all that weight as well, too. It was tough to see, but there was great golf all around. And it was a very productive and plentiful game for women's golf, having the major on NBC.
And let's talk about the amateur before we get to the playoff that happened here as well. That everyone thought we were going to have just a record-breaking winner here.
But that would have been cool. The 17-year-old Mega Gane.
Yeah.
The future probably of women's golf. And she's just got a great personality too. You know why, Mike? Mm-hmm. She's got a great personality. She doesn't have any social media. She can actually just like live in peace and quiet and not have to deal with all the trolls out there on the internet. I think that's why she's such an electric personality. I really do.
I don't understand what that means.
I know, right? The 17-year-old going to be going to Stanford, just a full bubbly personality in the amateur. She really shined through. She was bringing on the crowd. She did the Rory McIlroy, you know, cupping the ear. I can't hear you. You got to get louder when she made a couple birdies earlier in the week. And it was just a really fun performance to see. She did shoot 77 in the final round. Still good enough, though, to be the low amateur and 17 years old. Just another proof of the women's game and just how young and plentiful it is in terms of talent.
Yeah, we're going to see a lot of her in the future and looking forward to it because that's exactly what the LPGA needs is more players like her. Let's talk about the free golf we got, though, out of the U.S. Open, the playoff between Yuka Saso and Nasa Hatakoka.
Nice job.
Yes, well done. I'm getting better.
Yeah.
This went to three playoff holes, but if you were only got NBC, you only got to see two of them.
I mean, this was a head scratcher indeed, because the playoff was so electric. I know there was a little bit of a breathe out for the American golf fans not having Lexi be part of it, but these were two splendid players in Saso and Hatakoka that were playing great all week. Saso, 19 years old as well. 19 years young, really. 19 years young. Yep. And ended up getting the win on the third playoff hole, but cutting away for the gymnastics. Yep. And I get it, Simone Biles. She's a goat. She's a legend in the game. But just really, really poor form to cut away in that moment to see Saso get the win on the third playoff hole and be the youngest major champion in LPGA history. It was quite a moment.
Yeah, this didn't make a lot of sense to me when you cut away from a live event that you're covering, that you've been covering all afternoon with a playoff. You don't know how much longer it's going to go, but I mean, come on, women's golf is exploding right now. And you decide to cut away to do something that I'm going to lay this down on gymnastics. Typically, gymnastics is tape delayed.
Finals. They had already had it live on another network already. So the gymnastics fans were not getting completely snubbed. They were able to watch what they wanted. It was just a question of which channel they wanted it on. It was really just a mess from the NBC programming side. But the bottom line is it only took 10, 15 more minutes. They could have just stayed on the air for just a little bit longer and would have got the finish the right way. Nonetheless, really cool and awesome week to see the LPGA at Olympic Club. Nice classic California West Coast venue with those strangely tall trees as well, too. It was a neat venue indeed.
Yeah. Can I also just say that I was looking at this the other day. I don't really typically pay a ton of attention to this, but we've seen the LPGA logo a lot recently in general because it's been on those awesome hoodies. The LPGA logo is so much better than the PGA Tour logo.
Yeah.
So much better.
Might need an update, guys, at Ponte Vedra Beach. No offense, but yeah, nice job to the team and the LPGA with the logo update. And you're right, those hoodies are everywhere. If you haven't seen them, check out the social media feed of any golf personality, because chances are they got one. Hey, LPGA, if you want to send us one, I'll gladly rock it.
Oh, yeah, why not? I'll do it. Let's talk about this next week. The PGA Tour heads about an hour up the road from me. They're in Ridgeland, South Carolina.
Where is this, Mike? I pointed this out to you recently, and you were
nowhere.
I pinpoint this here. Yeah,
Ridgeland is literally in the middle of nowhere. You're about an hour from Savannah, an hour from Hilton Head, a little more than an hour probably from Charleston. There's nothing there. The highway, the exit off I-95. There's a Days Inn, and there's a not a very good Best Western.
Oh, man.
And I don't even think that there might be a McDonald's at that exit. I don't know.
Those are Corn Ferry accommodations. No offense. Yeah. Those aren't PGA Tour accommodations. I think you're going to have some friends staying in Savannah this week.
I would think so. They're going to be coming down here to Savannah. I'm sure they could be flying into the Savannah airport, most likely, because that's probably the best bet there. So, yeah, I don't think they're going to be staying local to the course here. But the course does look beautiful, brand new, completely private. But I don't know if you saw this. They also, Congaree does they're really into providing golf to young people and doing summer classes as part of their foundation. So they do a lot to grow the game, which is also really awesome.
Love that. Yeah, it's the Palmetto Championship, new venue, new course. This is always fun when you just get kind of a blank slate. I like looking up a few pictures just to kind of get the lay of the land. It's got a lot of classic kind of Southern vibes, a lot of South Carolina feel to it as well. And like you said, it's going to be unique. You know, you just kind of like to think that maybe just hot players recently are just going to take good form into a new venue, but there could be some home course advantage as well too here. DJ's home state. I know Kevin Kisner lives right down the road from here. There's a lot of guys that are stationed within a couple hour radius of Congress. So there's definitely some guys who played it, but it is fun to just kind of have a new blank slate for as much as we love the routine of the tour schedule to mix it up on the calendar.
Yeah, it should be a lot of fun. And DJ, of course, trying to win his first tournament in his home state of South Carolina.
Interesting.
So, which I was surprised that he hasn't won one. But when you think about all tournaments in South Carolina, there aren't really that many.
Yeah, no heritage, I guess, in his name. Not really his type of course. So no. Interesting. Well, you'll check out our picks Wednesday evening. You're coming real close. You had Morikawa sitting on it all week. I know as soon as the John Rahm news broke, you were like, oh, wow, my Morikawa ticket is alive and well.
I'm real excited for a while there. So
maybe going with him again. We'll see. TBD, but our picks are on Twitter. I'm at Course of Life 1 and you're at MWRINC.
Let's switch over to Tuned In, where we share what we're tuning into outside of the world of sports. For me, my wife left me.
Oh, all geez.
She didn't leave me. She left me all alone.
That was a good clip. Headline. We're going to clip that out right there.
which means I'm like sitting around in the house twiddling my thumbs because I was also on a little staycation for the last couple of days this week.
Yeah.
And so I've just been watching movies, watching stuff I've seen before. Just, you know, it's killing time doing that. Went out and played golf a little bit too, so that was fun, but it was hot. And
I saw that, and I saw you had the pleasure of walking in the Georgia heat, Mike, in June.
Yep.
Is that real?
Yep.
Did that happen?
90 degree heat. The humidity was off the charts. The front nine, they were doing cart path only, and the back nine, they were doing walking only.
Yikes.
So we just decided to walk all 18.
It's a good exercise day right there for anyone who hasn't done a walk like that. It's impressive.
I finished strong with a par, so I'll take that.
It's always a good way to go out. A couple of things I was tuned into this past week, this past weekend. We had the Logan Paul versus Mayweather match. I know we chronicled the I got your hat moment. And of course, in true boxing is dead fashion, there was no winner to the fight. They just fought the distance and there was no conclusive winner. There was no actual like legit judges score. So everyone just left scratching their head asking for a rerun. That's typical boxing court.
So all this money was going to go to charity, because I think I saw something too that was like Logan Paul and Mayweather were going at it again, and Logan Paul was like, let's do this. You double how much you're going to pay my charity.
Yep, that's the next one, Mike. So we're going to watch out for that. I mean, I think there was some money going to charity, but don't worry. You know that these two parties line their pockets as well.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
The other random show I'm tuned into, which turned back in, they ran it in mid 2020 pandemic. It glazed over a lot of TV fans, but it's on ABC, a show called Emergency Call. A very cool reality show that goes behind the life and inside of 911 call operating centers. You get some scary, weird, funny, and everything in between calls all the time. I've only called 911 once in my life, fortunately, Mike. It was a mistake when I was about 3 or 4 years old. And yes, the cops did show up. I don't know if you had any experience with that, but that's my only 911 extent right there.
I mean, I've had to call 911 working in retail. I've had to call 911 a couple times.
Oh, yes.
So always a fun time when you got to call them. And if you do call them by accident, they roll in units to you no matter what. So.
They do. Yep. And they actually saved one of the best calls from the first episode of the new season. Was a mom who was stuck on the roof of her house with her kid and her parrot that was running away on the roof. Fortunately, they did catch the parrot, Mike. I know you were wondering. So.
I was heartbroken over
these,
the potential.
These are the things you can see on Emergency Call, ABC. Yeah. Good little show.
Let's get into this week's guest. Alex, you've had the opportunity to talk to a lot of great guests from the LPGA Tour. And on this week, you got to chat with Hope Barnett, part of the content team for the LPGA Tour. So she's talked to so many more LPGA's tour stars than you have.
Yes, we got a couple under our belt, you know, Tiffany Joe, Cheyenne Knight, to name a couple. And you can check out those interviews in our archives of any podcast place where you follow. But Hope does a really great job for the LPGA content team, which has really stepped up in the last couple of years, which you and I have noticed. Talks about interviewing Annika, the GOAT as well, too, and a whole lot more coming your way.
Let's get into that interview. But first, as always, we want to let you know that it's brought to you by Desert Fox Golf, our friends of the show and the makers of the Phone Caddy. The Desert Fox team is based in Arizona, so they know golf, and the Phone Caddy is crafted by both golfers and engineers. The Phone Caddy is unique because it mounts right onto your golf cart in seconds in a place where you can actually see and use your phone. Keep your yardage and scoring apps at your fingertips, change music, answer calls and texts, and more, all with the Phone Caddy from Desert Fox. It's the most functional way to keep your phone safe and ready on the course at all times. And it works seamlessly with almost any phone model And it's the perfect gift to get for Father's Day.
Just in time. Yep.
The perfect gift. And we can save you an extra 10%. Use promo code Course of Life. Get a phone caddy for your dad in any number of colors, including their Patriotic line, and save 10%. This thing really isn't a lot of money. This is a great deal. It's already like $25.
So Patriotic line, July 4th. I mean, this just writes itself, doesn't it?
That too. So again, that's promo code Course of Life. Their website, desertfoxgolf.com. Get yourself a phone caddy. Get one for your dad. Save 10%. Promo code Course of Life at desertfoxgolf.com.
Next up on the tee from San Antonio, Texas, right down the road from me, she's part of the content team for the LPGA Tour and does some really great pieces behind the scenes in the game of women's golf. It's Hope Barnett joining the Course of Life. Hope, how are you doing today?
Hi, I'm good. How are you? Thanks so much for having me.
Doing fantastic. Great to have a fellow Texan on as well, too. I want to start first, before we get into your Texas background, with just your quick thoughts. We just came off a really awesome U.S. Women's Open Week at the Olympic Club. How much did you get to see? And we had a really crazy performance from, you know, an American meltdown to a teenage winner. There was definitely a lot going on this past weekend in women's golf.
Oh my gosh, there was so much going on. It was so incredible to watch. Unfortunately, I didn't get to be there. One of my coworkers was, but I'm pretty jealous because, I mean, watching Yuka win, it was just so incredible. The storylines that shaped out and being able to see fans out there again, it was awesome. It was definitely a great week. And I think it was a good week to have all those fans back.
It was. Yeah. I'm starting to see them come back in much larger numbers on the LPGA as well, in addition to the rest of the world of golf, which is definitely a welcome sight. Let's get into your background. Like you said, you're a lot of Texas in your background, including where you went to school as an Aggie at Texas A&M. Tell everyone a little bit about your time there. I see you've got reels and a lot of cool sports journalism moments from your time as a student there. Did you always have a journalism focus going into school at Texas A&M?
Yeah, well, first of all, Giggum, to anyone listening to this, I love Texas A&M. I grew up an A&M fan. Most of my life, my older sister went there. I'm originally from West Texas. But going in, I knew I wanted to work in sports and communications. I just didn't know exactly, you know, what field exactly. And that's when I kind of got in touch with some people at 12th Man Productions. It's kind of just the production company at Texas A&M that handles sports production and videos. And, you know, we worked hand in hand with SEC Network and all of that stuff. And honestly, when I started working there, I knew nothing about, you know, sports media or production or anything. But as soon as I started, you know, working football games, you know, basketball games, whatever it may be, I realized like, okay, this is definitely where I want to be. I want to be in sports and I want to be in journalism in some way, shape or form.
Yeah. And getting that taste, especially like a high level D1 school's got to be awesome too. Myself and my co-host, we went to a smaller school that was communication focused, but it was low level D1. Being at A&M where you're part of, like you said, the 12th man and one of the craziest fan bases in college sports. What was that like to cover the teams and the athletes you were seeing on campus every day?
Oh my gosh, it was so cool. It was really, I mean, just every single game I had the best seat in the house, you know, whether I was down on the field or I was down on the court or whatever it may be. I think it also opened my eyes up to a bunch of other sports too. Like I watched baseball my whole life, but I started working the softball games and I was like, okay, I am all in on softball. Like I love how fast paced it is. Yeah. Like I was able to work several sports like swimming and diving, like a bunch of different other sports that really just, I mean, it made me feel like I was part of the 12th man. And I was able to produce content for them, you know, on a weekly basis. And, you know, looking back and seeing that as like my college experience, I honestly couldn't have been any better. Like I could not have been any luckier, honestly.
Love it. So you're clearly an Aggie. And then the other thing we obviously have to mention in your bio, Hope Barnett on IG, is cat mom to Milo. So tell us about Milo. Is he one of those run and hide and go seek cats or friendly introduction when you see Milo?
Oh my gosh. I like to explain him as cute, but psycho. He's a little bit crazy, but I love him so much. I actually I hope I don't get in trouble for this, but I had to lock him in a room with my dad because I'm at my parents' house right now in San Antonio. I had to lock him in a room because he will come in and he will just steal the show. He would come in right now and start meowing. Like, literally just because he hears me talking, he's like, no, no, no. You're supposed to be paying attention to me right now.
Especially if I was asking you questions. God forbid that happened, right?
Oh, yeah. It would not be okay. But yeah, well, I rescued
him. Thanks for doing
that.
I'm sure he'll be okay once you let him out as soon as we're done talking. Let's talk a little golf background. I'm curious because you mentioned how you were kind of getting into sports media and learning about all the different sports programs at A&M. What's your background in terms of just playing the game of golf in general?
Yeah, so I played a lot of sports growing up, but I actually never played that much golf. I played a little bit with my dad here and there, but nothing crazy. But I just always loved sports. And so at some point in college, I actually have to give my ex-boyfriend credit here. When we were dating, he played college golf and I would go to his tournaments and I just kind of fell in love with the game. And I was like, I want to get in on this. So I started playing. I was terrible. I still wouldn't say I'm much better, but I kind of just started getting into the game a little bit and I was applying for internships and I saw the PGA Tour internship and I applied for it and I got it. I was very surprised, but excited. So I moved down to Ponte Vedra, Florida for the summer. I think it was 2018 and it was just the best experience. I knew immediately. I was like, okay, golf is where I want to be. And then being in women's golf is an even greater opportunity. Getting to tell these women's stories is just, it's super cool.
Yeah. And we're going to get into those stories in a moment. I'm curious how the transition happened between that time you spent working for the PGA Tour and then getting the gig for the LPGA Tour. What were the steps in between there that helped you get to where you are now?
Yeah. So obviously I made so many great connections at the PGA Tour. It is an awesome company and all the people that I met were so helpful and wanting to just, you know, push me in the right direction. So when I went back to Texas A&M, because I still had to finish my senior year, I did a little bit more with the A&M golf team, which was really neat. Started playing a lot more. And, you know, that just really even more so solidified that I wanted to work in golf. So when I graduated, I actually saw a job with the LPGA and I applied for it. And it was mainly video editing and stuff like that. And I went down to Daytona Beach, which is where their, you know, their headquarters are. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, did the whole thing. I went through several interviews, and I actually didn't get that job, which now looking back on it, it's probably best because it wasn't fully suited for me. And I think everyone kind of knew that because I wanted to do like on camera and I wanted to be, you know, travel more and do stuff like that. So, they told me, they're like, oh, we'll keep you in mind. But you know, when a company tells you that, you're like, okay, sure.
Yeah, usually that's the last time you talk to them actually. So
yeah.
You for that.
Exactly. Which had happened to me multiple times already. I'd been applying to jobs for months, you know, getting in on sports media is like the hardest thing to do. So I was like, you know, I was pretty down, but I was like, you know what? It's okay. So I ended up actually working at a TV station in College Station. It's called KBTX for about 6 months as a news reporter, which gave me the best experience. It was very difficult. And I learned so much from that job and my colleagues there. And then the LPGA actually reached back out to me six months into my contract and said, hey, we want you to come look at this job and see if it's a good fit for you. And it was. And so I moved down to Florida 6 months into my first job out of college, but it was so worth it. Yeah.
Yeah. That was a perfect little sidestep you did for your time in College Station to kind of recollect and eventually get the job that you really wanted from the get-go. So let's talk about the LPGA team and content and just kind of take us a little bit behind the scenes of how everything gets engineered. I love the way the LPGA team, you know, really almost forces you to get to know these awesome personalities throughout tour on social media and wherever you guys can get your content. What's been the keys, you know, within the LPGA content team to the success lately and the momentum we're seeing in women's golf?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think one thing I always kept in mind working in sports is that, you know, these people, I mean, not everyone, but I've always loved sports because I've gotten to know the players and, you know, like I've gotten to know their stories and who they are. So I always knew coming into the LPGA that I definitely wanted to be able to tell their stories in whatever way that was. And when I came in, I realized that that was already happening like on a daily basis. I'm sure you've seen all the like drive-on stories and everything like that. And that was actually engineered by Roberta Bowman, who is just an incredible person and such a good mentor and like awesome person to look up to. So I think really it's, you know, shaping the fact that yes, all of these women have absolutely awesome stories, but at the same time, like they are so good at golf, you know, and it's like, it's something that doesn't even need to be said, but it's like, if you just turn the TV on and watch them play, it's mind blowing, you know, it really is. And so, I think behind the scenes, I honestly have to give my team credit. When I came in, I realized that they already had the ball rolling and they were doing so much. And my team members are, my manager is Brianne Wigley, and then Ben Elliott and David Kim. They're all my coworkers, and they're just so good at their jobs. So being able to produce this content behind the scenes and make sure that we're telling their stories is, I think, pretty important to us.
I love that. And we're trying to do that as much as we can on the podcast here. And we've had a couple of great personalities from the tour as well on that I wanted to ask you about, since you definitely spend a lot of time out there on the road and inside the ropes. One is Cheyenne Knight, who's a fellow Texan as well, along with you and I. She's got a lot of roots in the state, and she had her debut win in the Dallas area as well, too, at the Volunteers event. Talk to me about just your time with her. She just absolutely seems so poised on and off the course, and really showed through in our conversation as well.
Oh my gosh. Definitely. She is such a sweet girl. I remember, I think the first time we ever really talked, like, you know, we talked in passing and stuff at tournaments, but I did an Instagram live interview with her. And you know, obviously I knew she was from Texas, so I was super excited about that. And she went to Alabama, which wasn't as excited about that, 'cause I knew she grew up an A&M fan. But she's just, I mean, she's so good. And not to mention, she's very poised, how she carries herself. She's so like elegant. And I love watching her play and talking to her. You could talk to her for hours.
Yeah, I mean, she's got just a nice girl. Really, really determined personality. And I love the kind of perspective that she has on the game. She's a great follow as well. And on the flip side, you have the totally vibrantly awesome, wild personalities that there are on the LPGA Tour that you get to highlight. One of them who we had on is Tiffany Joe, who I think has maybe sneaky one of the best sense of humors in the game of golf. Tell me what it's like to have interviews like that, where you just get to ask wild and crazy questions to great guests like her for content.
It is so much fun. I'm laughing over here just because I'm imagining some of the interviews I've had with Tiff, and she is just such a character. She might be the most positive person I've ever met. Like during every single interview, I always leave happy and I leave in a great mood, and I'm just laughing so hard. Like I actually really want her to take me surfing. I've already told her this.
Seriously,
but,
but it's got to be a future piece that you're going to do here soon. I hope she's always giving us the wave check on social media, no matter where in the world she is. So I know the surfing conditions of some amazing places in the world, even though I've never surfed a day in my life.
Yeah, exactly. No, definitely stay tuned, because we've chatted about this. But I think that's one of the best parts about this job, is that there's so many different personalities. And Tiff is an amazing example, because she is just so funny. I mean, she's just such a great person. And if anyone meets her, they would honestly just be lucky to just have a conversation with her, because she will have you laughing in a minute.
Nice. One of the cooler pieces that I saw you got to do is, we need to talk about the GOAT. You had the opportunity to interview Annika at her return to golf recently, just casually taking about a dozen years off of competitive golf and making the cut like it's no big deal. That was awesome in and of itself. But from your time talking with Annika, what strikes you about her from your chat?
Yeah, that was so cool. I mean, obviously, I've always known who Annika was. So when I found out that I was going to get to interview her, and I found out she was coming back to play that week, I was so starstruck. And I was like, oh my gosh, I have to prepare for this as much as possible. It was just so neat, because when we sat down, it was like we weren't even having, you know, it wasn't even like an interview. It was just like a conversation. And she was so nice. And her husband was there with her too, you know, and her family. And so, you know, getting to see that dynamic of where she was, you know, before she retired, to seeing her now, and, you know, her kids running up to her and hugging her at the end of the round, like, and she made the cut that weekend. I mean, it was just, it was so neat. She lived there. Like, such a cool experience getting to meet her. I'll definitely mark that down as a bucket list moment.
Yeah, I mean, she figured the tournament was in her backyard. She might as well just kind of roll out of bed and go make the cut, you know?
Yeah. No big deal. Might as well.
That was really cool. I love her poise and the ability for her to just be such a killer, like competitively, and then just break out a smile like seconds later. It's very hard to turn that on and off. And she represents both the sides of that personality very well. Mm-hmm. In terms of the LPGA, one thing I do know that you've got some experience with, which you can pretty much help our entire golfing audience out with, is Instagram pics. I know you've been out on lots of different LPGA tour venues and taken a lot of photos for content as well. So I'm curious, tips for like the best angles for golf shots specifically on the course. I've seen some good stuff from you. So I was curious what you could help our audience with.
Okay. Well, first of all, I think some of the best, you know, obviously the major championship courses that we've played in the last year or two, those always make for great backdrops. So that's, you know, you can't really go wrong with that. But I mean, honestly, just being like yourself and like being goofy and not being scared to like ask someone to take a picture of you, or just being like, hey, this is a cool view, like let's take a photo real quick. But I also, this isn't quite fair because one of my coworkers who's on the creative side of things, he has a great camera and we always go out and shoot things. So I'm like, hey, will you take a picture of me real quick? But I'd say my biggest tip is just take multiple photos so you have some options, and yeah, just be yourself, get in front of a pretty backdrop and it should turn out good.
And what's your favorite like feature on a golf course that you always end up photographing? Mine is, I'm a sucker for like when there's an island green or like water surrounding the green. I'm always finding myself just getting like 10 different angles of holes like that. But what are your favorite moments on the course?
I'd say any hole with water. Well, first of all, I'm really bad at them myself. So it's like, I feel like if I take a photo of it, I'm like, okay, maybe people will think I'm a little better if they think I'm like feeling bold right now in front of this hole. But yeah, I'd say like any hole with water is, plus I grew up in like the desert, so our golf courses don't quite look like that. So yes. I like those holes.
Not a ton of water hazard zone, West Texas, for those who've never been out there before as well.
It is a little dry.
Again, it's Hope Barnett on Instagram. She works on the content team for the LPGA Tour. Let's get to some quick shots before we wrap up. I know you've been to lots of different places like we discussed. What's your favorite LPGA Tour stop to visit? And not necessarily because of the course, just maybe because of like your favorite place to go while the tour is there for like a week or weekend trip.
Yeah, I definitely say, well, last year, I think the best time I had was at KPMG. You know, it's a major championship. I mean, that's kind of hard because it changes venues. But I mean, just seeing, you know, the show that they put on the PGA, it's so awesome to witness and to be there. And there's just a lot going on. So that was a lot of fun. And that's coming up obviously soon in Atlanta. So super excited to be out there, but, I really, really enjoyed, for the first time this year, I went to the Kia Classic, and that is in Carlsbad, California.
Oh, that's a nice part of the country. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. I loved it. They pretty much had to drag me out of there because I did not want to leave. I stopped at like the beach and like a restaurant on the way out. I was like, do I have to go? Do I have to leave? But yeah, that was fun.
Nice. Tell me a little bit about Vegas, because I saw you got to be out there. Inaugural LPGA match play event, which I thought was really cool. And they had it at Shadow Creek, iconic venue that's hosted the match between Tiger and Phil as well, too, as well as PGA Tour events recently. What was the time like being out in Vegas? And I guess Vegas with crowds again probably felt a little bit interesting, didn't it?
Yeah, you know, it was super fun. First of all, we were all just so psyched to even, you know, go out to Shadow Creek. We're like, this is so cool. I've always wanted to see it. So I thought that was a pretty special opportunity to get to have a tournament out there and, you know, nonetheless have a match play event. So I've never covered a match play event. So that was interesting, you know, trying to adjust because it's much more fast paced, but it was so fun to be able to watch them compete like one-on-one, just, you know, see all of their competitive juices like flowing. It was super exciting. And yeah, like you said, being out in Vegas with a bunch of crowds. It was like almost felt wrong, but I was also like, you're fine. You're vaccinated. Like,
yeah, it's everyone's, okay. Everyone's checking themselves twice right now. They're like, is this okay? Does this feel okay? It doesn't feel okay, but it really is okay. Yeah, it's all good.
No. Exactly. No, but it was so cool.
That's awesome. And I got to ask about your time as an Aggie. You talked about it briefly. A lot of 12th man experience. The 12th man, for those who don't know, is just the absolutely lit crowd at Texas A&M football games and the rest of the athletics for that note. But I'm curious, what was your absolute best or like most electric, wild 12th man moment as a student at Texas A&M?
Oh, that is actually very easy. That is when we played LSU. We beat them. I think it was, oh, I just like literally skipped around. We went to like 7 overtimes.
My gosh, were you at that game?
I was down I was down in the end zone, and it was absolutely crazy. The stadium was booming, and I think we ended up leaving that night at like 12:30 a.m. I mean, the game just went on so long, and everyone rushed the field afterwards, and I lost my voice for probably, I think, a week because I was screaming just the whole time. It was absolutely wild. For anyone listening, if you have not been to a Texas A&M football game, I would highly recommend.
Definitely. Yeah. Check the highlights of that 7 overtime game too. I remember that vividly. That was a crazy one. Very cool that you were there. And then we love to wrap up our conversations with our 19th hole question. We have a food podcast as well. Always end with food. So we love talking about food, especially on the golf course. Maybe when you finish a long day working a tournament and you like to get into like a nice clubhouse, what's like your favorite meal and drink to have at the end of a long day?
Oh, I would have to go with a burger. Definitely a burger and probably a beer. Very, very easy going.
That's
very
tried simple. True. That's spoken like a true Texas girl right there too.
Yeah, I was about to say, do I sound like I'm from Texas or?
Shines right through. Now I love it. Hey, thanks again, Hope, for joining. I really appreciate you being on the Course of Life. Looking forward to more content with you at the LPGA Tour and growing the women's game as well.
Oh, thank you so much. This was so much fun. I really appreciate it.
That interview with Hope Barnett is brought to you by our friends at Groovit Golf, makers of the Groovit Golf Brush. You've seen it on the bags of tour caddies and your favorite athletes and golf personalities on social media, and it's the brush to get for Father's Day. This brush's patented pump sprays water cleaning solution right onto the club face for you, making it quick and efficient to clean clubs or even your golf ball in seconds. The Groovit brush includes a detachable magnet, so you can bring the brush to the club head. So when you're cart path only, just pop it off your bag and bring it with you to the other side of the fairway. And the Groovit brush comes with a 3-year bristle guarantee. That means if you can wear out the brush head cleaning golf clubs in 3 years, send it back. Groovit will get you a free replacement. So prepare to be amazed with the consistency and control the clean grooves will give you. Using your existing golf clubs with the Groovit, you'll get the spin, trajectory, and consistency you're looking for. So head on over to grooveitbrush.com. Get a Groovit brush for yourself and your dad for Father's Day and get free shipping in the U.S. Again, that's grooveitbrush.com. Head on over there and get your Groovit brush today. And we're back. Great chat there with Hope Barnett and chat with Annika. I mean, if Annika wants to come on this podcast, I think that'd be great. But we'll take the interview that she did with Hope, too.
Yeah, absolutely. It's really cool that she got to catch up with the legend, the GOAT of GOATs. And you know that because Annika just took a casual dozen years off of competitive golf and just walked back out and made the cut on the LPGA Tour. That's when you know you're the GOAT, is when you can still just casually do that. It was really cool to hear those stories and everything else she's covered on tour. Like I said, you know, it's not just the quality of the game on the LPGA that stepped up in the last couple of years. It's the content team. We've seen a lot more video and audio to get to know these players better. And we love being a tiny part of that to profile them as well. They're doing a great job.
We do what we can. And you can catch all the interviews we've done with past LPGA store stars on our archives. Just make sure you subscribe. Give us a rating on your favorite podcast app. Let us know you love us. And we're going to keep doing stuff like this because that's what we like to do.
Yep. Full episodes on YouTube, vlogs coming up each week as well, too. I'm thinking I might do a fun little trip vlog as well, too. I had a fun little time down there in Mexico, Mike. So I'm going to recap it for everyone who doesn't have the fortune of being in that wonderful swim out suite that I was.
Yeah, we'll talk about how much we hate you in a little bit. But first, let's do a quick wraparound. Here are some sports. Lay it on me. It was Red Sox and Yankees this weekend. Go ahead.
Brooms out for a rare sweep in New York for the Boston Red Sox. I was just as stunned as you were, honestly. Didn't even really have our best three pitchers out during the weekend, but it wasn't needed because the offense was there and late. Two late runs Sunday night to complete the sweep. It's only June, Mike. It's too early to get very hype, but yeah, there's my 30-second brag session.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
Well, now we can bring all of the hopes of Boston back down to earth because let's talk a little basketball. Celtics lost.
Eliminated in first round. Let's see. We moved our coach to GM and our GM retired because he's just so sick of trying to put together a winning team. That's where the Celtics are at right now. So we watch on in the East. I mean, for anyone who was hoping the Lakers weren't part of the finals, you're in luck there. LeBron faltered in the first round. Too busy on Space Jam 2, Mike. And in LeBron's post-game press conference, he said that he's playing for the Toon Squad against the Goon Squad this summer. That's what he's most excited about. So that's where his head's at.
You know, I bet if Steph Curry had won, he would have made it past the first round.
Yes, quite maybe. So yeah, mixed bag right now in the Boston sports scene. I sit and wait till football, and I'm hoping the Bruins can continue this cup run. We'll see.
Let's look out for that indeed. But let's hashtag always own food.
Yes, brought to you by our friends at Toasty Snacks, makers of the Toasty Bites and Super Bites. Shockingly good for you and shockingly healthy. Plus, they don't melt at all. So again, it's COL20 for 20% off of Toasty Bites today, or just head to toasty.com/COL. I was on vacation last week. You saw some pictures. Check out Always End With Food Pod on Instagram as well, too, for our IG food podcast and photos there. But I tried all sorts of random things, Mike. It was great being in paradise and an all-inclusive resort. You can order whatever you want and you don't feel guilty about ordering three appetizers and four entrees. It's a great world. It really is.
They're not going to judge you to your face.
Get back in the kitchen, they definitely judge us. Overweight Americans for ordering as much as we do. But besides the fact I got to try some very unique things, I had some octopus as well too. Just doesn't taste as cringeworthy as you'd think. And yes, I did have the escargot, AKA snails, just garlicky, buttery, savory bites of goodness. They're just delightful.
So what was your favorite thing you ate during the week?
I'm going to have to go with the fish tacos just because I had them a couple times. I had a few varieties of tacos, obviously, down there. Birria tacos are all the rage on social media. I got to have some of those. It was a good seafood week as well, too. You can't complain eating seafood when you can literally see the ocean. That's always a good sign. I was picking out all week.
Well, we're all super jealous of you and we hate you for all that you've done.
But you can just get a glimpse of it. Again, it's Always End With Food Pod on Instagram for the photos and our monthly food podcast as well.
That's right. Make sure you follow us there and subscribe to that podcast as well. Available everywhere, just like we are everywhere. And make sure you follow us on Twitter. I'm at MWRINC. He's at Course of Life 1. And that's all we got today, right?
That's a wrap for this week's Course of Life. We're coming back next week with a huge episode because it's a major championship week. Looking forward to who gets paired with who and all the drama that's going to come. If this past week was any indication, we're in for another great one in the world of golf. So we'll see everyone next week.